The F and Rad Snowboard Podcast is presented by Vans. Season 8 of F and Rad is sponsored by Wired Snowboards, Anon Optics, The Boardroom Snowboard Shop, find an epicagent.com, and Tribute Board Shop in Nelson, BC. The Boardroom Snowboard Shop offers the greatest selection of the highest quality snowboards and everything you need to go snowboarding with the most knowledgeable staff at the guaranteed best price. The Boardroom's performance guarantee makes sure your snowboarding gear works the way you want it to out there on the snow, and the stores are stocked with snowboards, boots, bindings, outerwear, goggles, gloves, accessories. So drop by the West Forth Vancouver location, the Lonsdale location in North Vancouver, or go to boardroomshop.com and check out their new website to order quality goods from a quality company. The Boardroom Snowboard Shop, for all your snowboarding needs. Please pause the show and subscribe to our YouTube channel. That would help me out a lot. Thank you very much. Support also comes from Dakine, Mount Seymour, Grouse Mountain, Pro Standard GoPro Accessories, and Volcom Outerwear. Special thanks this episode to Beneath Base Layer, Forum Snowboards, hey, welcome back, you guys, Tomahawk Indigenous Cannabis Extract Products, and ThisPlaceIsAwesome.net. Ville Luoma was a Forum Aider, a Finnish ripper recruited when the Scandinavians were throwing their collective hat in the professional snowboarding ring. Ville climbed the ranks quickly by consistently pushing progression on the giant backcountry jumps of that time. He joined the Forum 8 for Resistance, one of the fan-favorite MacDog movies, and he left for K2, where he helped breathe new life into a heritage snowboard brand. We visited Ville at his home outside Portland on our way down to Mount Hood this summer. This conversation goes until it's absolutely dark outside. It's a fun one. Please enjoy this conversation with Ville Luoma.
I have a friend that we just visited that stopped drinking a year ago, and just completely, and so he introduced me to that. And I kind of go back and forth. I'll go a non-alcoholic beer, regular beer.
I cut back. Like, there was a point where I went to the liquor store and it was like 5 to 11. And then the cashier said, "Oh, we were wondering when you would get here." And I just went, "Oh, that doesn't feel good."
That's not good.
So I'm here with Ville at his house in Portland. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah.
Thanks for being, I'm going to say one of our first video interviews.
Oh, well, whatever. I feel special.
So you're Finnish. Mm-hmm. When did you move from Finland to United States full time?
Full time, I think. That was 2004.
Okay.
So I didn't live in Finland. I was like living out of my bag, some years in Sweden, some in Switzerland. So I pretty much left Finland when I was 18.
Yeah. And were you already a pro snowboarder at that point?
Yeah.
Who were your sponsors?
Then it was Silence.
Oh, wow.
And Billabong.
Yep.
And Dragon.
Rad.
And 32.
That is a solid lineup of sponsors for an American guy. How do you work that out in Finland?
I feel like I was kind of in the right place at the right time. I was riding a lot with Ami Voutilainen, mm-hmm. and Joni Mäkinen. Mm-hmm. And there was like this buzz about Scandinavian riders.
I remember.
So all these companies were like, "Oh, who's going to be the next new Scandinavian kid?"
Yep.
And so people were kind of, I think, telling Ami and Joni to keep an eye out.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, they were like, kind of like, "Hey, do you want to? You want a free board? You want to go snowboard?" And there's these companies that will pay you your trip. I'm like, "Really?" And then it kind of snowballed from there.
And that's Silence. When Silence first started?
Actually, my first snowboard was Hammer.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But that was just my first snowboard.
Right. Yeah. Of course.
And then Ami got picked up by Silence, and that's like my first sponsor.
Yeah. Were you a kid at that point? You're still in high school?
Or? I was 16.
Yeah. So in Finland, is that you graduate at that point, or you still got 1 year left?
So in Finland, like high school, it's a little different because you have 9 years, and it's not quite high school, but it's sort of like high school. And then you go 3 years, either like gymnasium, or you can go to like, I don't know, you want to go learn about building cars or any kind of other handyman. There's another school for that.
Yeah.
And but the other 3 years in gymnasium is like just continuing studying. Like I was doing long math, like 6 hours of math a week.
Oh God.
And, yeah, no, it was insane. But anyways, I didn't finish that. I went second year and I quit full. Like I was like, I'm going snowboarding.
Yeah, you're already getting paid probably by that point. So what's the point?
Yep.
And the only thing I know about Finland is, like, because I would spend summers in Denmark with my grandparents when I was a little kid, and Finnish speaking is crazy, right? Like German, you can understand. It kind of sounds like, you know, rough English. I guess I got that backwards. English sounds like kind of weird.
No, it's a very difficult German language.
But Finnish is insane, right?
I mean, none of my kids speak Finnish, and I feel bad for it. I really do.
Would you immerse them in, like, send them to Finland for a few years to just pick it up?
Well, Lilu got accepted to Alvar Aalto University.
Sick. Congratulations.
Which is a really hard university to get into.
Amazing.
But she took a different route and went to Eindhoven in Netherlands instead.
Which is, you can do courses in English.
Yeah. But also, I was like, you're not going to handle the winters. In Finland, they're brutal, dark, wet, cold.
It's very northern.
It's like same kind of light as in Alaska.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like winters are dark.
Yeah.
Like by 2 p.m. sunsets.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it's going to be dark by 3.
Yeah. My daughter went to Montreal and that was a bit too much weather-wise for her to handle. Yeah. And that's still pretty temperate compared to, you know, oh, no, Montreal's cold. It's cold.
Yeah.
But also,
I've never been.
It's a cool spot. You were, did you do part of your career as like a rail guy?
No.
It was all jumps.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jumps, hips.
I mean, I in the very beginning when the rails started going, I was kind of doing some of that stuff. And I don't know why I stopped. I think I fell a couple of times. I didn't like the, and I also felt really like I'm on a snowboard and I was skateboarding. At the time, I felt like there was like this weird, I don't know, it felt silly.
Yeah.
And then
I can remember that time. Yeah, for sure.
But, you know, I don't, that was dumb. You know, you have all these ideas when you're younger and you're like, oh, I don't want to do that because it's dumb or whatever. But reality is, it's like, I should have kept going, but I
sure.
didn't. I don't regret it. I mean, I got away with not doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty rad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like you say, those sponsors were legit.
Yeah.
Like that was a good group of people to be sponsored by. And then, you know, I don't want to really jump ahead, but Forum, who approaches you to say, like, we want you on the Forum team?
That was actually Mike McIntyre.
Oh, so sick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was the one who approached me. He was like, hey, we want you on Forum.
We're putting together, did he tell you much? Like, we're putting together a killer team. We're building an empire.
No, it wasn't like, it was kind of, at the time, I was filming for Decade with him, and I remember hitting this jump in Tahoe, and Jeremy and JP were just sitting watching. They weren't hitting the jump, and I landed a trick, and then they were just, like, sick, and I think, like, JP or Jeremy said something like, we should put that kid on the Forum team, and then I think Mike was already thinking of that, but I just needed the encouragement from someone else, and then it was kind of like a done deal.
Yeah,
I was like, yeah.
Did you have to call Silence? Like, I remember talking with BK was the rep for those guys, and that was a tight knit group of people. Silence.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
Romy was my team manager.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked Romy, but at the time, Silence was kind of, you know, there was just like a lot of weird things happening and changes in the company. And
yeah.
Just felt like not a very stable company.
Yeah. That's probably a pretty good, yeah.
So
good intuition and, there.
And it just felt like it would be the right time to leave, sort of. And yeah, I don't know.
When you get those first forum boards, I mean, everybody talks about this that's on that forum team. Uh-huh. Like, they were no good. Like, they weren't great boards.
Yeah. I don't think I really care that much about that part, to be honest with you. I was like, whatever.
You could make them work.
Yeah, I was just like, whatever, the snowboard. But I think the more so was the mentality around it. Like, it was like they really wanted us to compete against each other. That was like the hardest part for me. It was like,
oh,
kinda like
interesting.
Building this like weird, like, hey, what shots did you get today? Oh, yeah, I heard so-and-so got this shot. And I was like, okay. Like, it was just like, it wasn't a healthy environment.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Is there a point of view where they were just trying to make something that had never been made before? Like, where they really want to push you guys and really want to, or was it more
at that point when there was like eight of us on the team, it was like really like, they're like, this is the, you know, we're going to really market. This is the sickest team, blah, blah, blah. I was so young and I just kind of was like, okay, whatever. I thought it was kind of cool, but also it was kind of silly. At the same time, I was like, whatever.
I love that so much. No way.
And I was maybe a little bit of an outsider of the group.
Okay.
Like, just did my own thing. I was friends with Yoni, obviously, mm-hmm. but they even tried to get me and him to like really compete and get competitive with each other. Instead of like going to a jump and being excited for your friend to get a shot,
yes,
they wanted to create this atmosphere like you better like one up your friend now.
That's so weird. And not the way that snowboarding really works.
No, but I didn't know really at the time.
Yeah, because you're a kid.
And so I just went with it. And after a while, I was like, I hate this.
Oh, wow.
And so like, oh, so didn't perform well because it really backfired on me. And so I think I had my worst year of snowboarding filming.
Wow.
Like first year on snow. On
after form. Resistance or during Resistance?
During Resistance. It was like, I could not snowboard.
Just wow.
Couldn't.
Like, it just wasn't your vibe.
No. I mean, and it wasn't like, I mean, there's a lot of things going on. Like, I just like started dating a girl and we moved in together and I was starting to make money. It was just a lot of changes at once.
Yeah.
And I was a kid.
Yeah. Where are you living at that point?
Mostly out of my bag, but we rented an apartment in Truckee.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so
Tahoe's got so many amazing places all in like an hour drive from each other.
Yeah.
It would be a great place to live and snowboard.
I mean, I still love that place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How much do you snowboard now? Jumping right ahead to the...
Not enough.
I can see where your face, yeah. Like, yeah. You're busy with your business now, for sure.
Yeah, business and kids, you know, mm-hmm. just family mm-hmm. stuff. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. getting older, like, I'm also, like, picky. Like, I'm like, I love going snowboarding, but I don't really feel like driving an hour and a half to the mountain if it's not really good.
Yep.
And snowboarding's expensive.
Oh, hell yeah.
It's like, which is kind of also a bummer, you know, like, you spend 100 and something bucks on a ticket, you better be really good.
That's the pressure. And once that pressure's there, it's that same thing. It's like, how do you enjoy a day that if you don't have the best day you've ever had, you waste your money?
I mean, I got spoiled, seriously, for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
I got to ride amazing terrain. Like, our job was to find the best snow. You know, you're just chasing storms.
Right.
And places to go film, so...
I'm surprised that you didn't jive more with, like, because Jeremy and JP kind of joined together, mm-hmm. right? I don't know. Yeah, Devin, oh, he was a bit of a lone wolf sometimes.
Yeah.
But, like, the guys kind of crewed up into little groups.
Yeah, yeah.
So you probably could have.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was just, I don't know. It was definitely, you know, I don't know. It wasn't my vibe. I don't know what it is. I mean, I liked riding with Devin.
Absolutely.
And Yoni. And everyone on the team is fine. And there's nothing wrong with riding any of them.
Right.
I think riding with, you know, good snowboarders that will push you is always exciting.
Yeah.
I think there's still a difference when you have someone that's, like, legitimately excited for you to get a shot versus someone is bummed that you got a shot because now it's so competitive. There was a little bit of that vibe.
I could see it. Yeah, there was a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
You guys were the first team where, I mean, by all accounts, the team...
I mean, right before the whole thing, it was, I think it was really cool. And I do believe we had, like, the best team.
Oh, hell yeah.
And all the riders were solid.
Yeah.
There was nothing... There's no, like, weak links.
No, nobody didn't belong on that team, right.
And so I do think that they did a really good job.
Yeah.
I'm curious in that. I think, you know, how are you going to keep that going? It's a different story. Like, how are you going to manage that group of people and keep everyone motivated to do what they did best before they got put on that team?
Right. Yeah. No, that's true.
And so it's just that small things, like, you know, someone hears that someone makes so much money and
yes.
Like, well, why would they make so much money? And it's like, well, you know, they negotiated better or whatever reason is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I heard from in the end that I was like on the low end of the totem pole and getting paid.
Yeah.
And I was never really, didn't question that much because at the time it was so much money for me anyways.
Yeah.
But when you start working your ass off and you push your snowboarding and do things that sometimes you might not do, but you're doing now because it's your job.
Yes.
Then you also want to get compensated.
Yep. Especially if you're with people that are getting compensated already.
Yeah.
I could see that. I could see that being tough. I think now, because it's what, almost 20 years later, mm-hmm. Forum was what, 97, 98?
I think 98.
Yeah.
99, yes. 2000. Yeah.
Yeah. That, Yeah, 25 years ago. Jesus.
Yeah.
It's insane. Like, some of these salaries are coming out and the way they negotiated, you know, JP and Jeremy flew to Burton and it leaked back to head office and then all of a sudden the numbers jump or whatever.
I mean, it was like, that's just a small part of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and then I was never really, that wasn't really my thing about like, oh, I'm going to make us money snowboarding.
Right.
It was just a bonus at that age of my life. But then when I found out that I was going to be a dad, that's when I was like, okay, I need to start actually like making sure I make enough money.
Decent money.
Yeah.
Start negotiating.
Yeah. And that's when I left the team.
Wow. Yeah. So you looked at the career and you looked at your trajectory and thought, okay, I want something more stable.
Well, it kind of just fell in my lap.
Yeah.
It was just someone came and was like, hey, how much would it be to take you off the team?
Wow.
Yeah.
Who was that?
Blue Montgomery.
yeah, Blue. Yeah. Capita.
Yeah.
And but how far along is Capita at this point?
It doesn't even exist.
This is...
when Blue was team manager for K2.
I forgot that he was team manager at K2 for a bit.
He did it for 1 year.
Where he cut his teeth and, you know, got his industry contacts and became, you know, the industry guy that could actually make Capita happen. Yeah. And K2, I remember when you joined the team, K2 was ecstatic.
Yeah.
The K2 rep in Vancouver was like, you're going to want to watch this guy. Vile is like, he's the shit. You guys are stoked.
Well, it definitely also, you know, it changed everything for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because now it was like less pressure. Even though I was making more money, there's like, I didn't have this same pressure anymore.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Better team manager, better work environment.
I think it was just the group of people. I didn't feel like I had to constantly one-up someone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Big fish in a little pond. No, that's not how it is. K2's been around forever.
Yeah.
And they were one of the heritage brands.
I think it was like, they were pretty excited and I was like helping them get like clean up their brand a little bit.
I remember that time.
And,
yeah.
And, you know, I was still young and pretty opinionated about things. I was like, I'm not riding those step-ins, not touching those.
You know, way
like,
to go.
And just like being maybe not the right approach. If I look back from, you know, now, you know, you you have sort of a little head when you start getting paid and you travel and all you do is getting film and video parts. And
you're the expert in the thing.
Yeah.
So I haven't yet spoken to anyone who jumped on the step-on thing for anything other than money.
Yeah.
That didn't say that.
I mean, there's, it sucked to me, it was them. Like, there was definitely like, if I felt like sort of a little bit of like a sellout, little bit, I was like, but at the same time, I was like, that kind of made it also like, so like, well, so what?
Yeah, of course I'm selling out. I need that money. I'm a dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're making good career choices. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
And K2 was really happy to have you. That was the vibe. Was this around 2000? Because I did a short stint. I worked at a shop in Vancouver called The Boardroom. And when my kid was born, it's almost Lilu's age, same era.
Yeah.
We moved to Toronto from Vancouver so I could work for K2 Canada.
Oh, wow.
And I flew to Vachon and saw their operation, the way that they'd been doing things with the, you know, they wove the fiberglass around the cores, and there's a really good vibe there.
Yeah.
And Ride had just moved in there, but they were separate. So there was like this separate team of cool Ride guys designing stuff. It had a really nice vibe at Vachon.
I actually liked when they were in Vachon.
Yeah, it was so sick.
Like, I would complain about the ferry and dealing with it, but in the end, I was like, it was a much better
situation. You know, Jamie Lynn grew up on Vachon, I think.
Did he?
I think so. Yeah.
I don't know. I think Vachon is so nice.
It's gorgeous. Yeah. It's really cool.
It's amazing that they had a factory there.
In the middle of this, like, nature, here's this K2 factory.
Like, I feel like that's kind of like everyone's dream is to, if they ever built something, that it would be located somewhere. I mean, obviously, you know, if snowboarding, you want to be in the mountains close to the snow.
Yes. Yeah.
But, you know, if I have, you know, a choice of where I want to be roasting coffee, I'd be like close to nature somewhere.
Yeah.
With a nice view.
Squim, have you ever been to the LibTech factory? It's on the Olympic Peninsula. I think that's what that's called. It's gorgeous.
I don't know if it was. So, you know where Cole is in Seattle? Kind of like by Ballard.
I know where that is.
I think did LibTech used to have a factory there?
Yeah, I think so.
I flew in there before I signed with K2 because I was getting, what's his name? Lee.
Oh, Dave Lee.
Dave Lee.
Yeah.
Dave Lee was like trying to get me on Supernatural.
Sick.
And I flew up actually there to meet them.
Oh, man.
And this is like when I was kind of like trying to figure out I needed to move away, because I think the word got out that K2 was giving me an offer, and then Supernatural was like, we should put this kid on the team. And
that would have been cool.
Yeah. I just was really nervous because it was like a new thing.
And
I felt like K2.
And rightfully so.
Yeah.
I mean, Supernatural only lasted the 2 years, maybe three.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I kind of was like, nah, I don't.
That's a smart move.
Yeah.
K2's still around now. Their team is killer.
Yeah.
They really, at that point, they turned a corner and put a lot of effort into the coolness factor of their team.
Yeah.
I think there was a time between, say, like Farmer and, I mean, this is probably before your time, but like Sean Farmer was on, Kevin Young was on, Daniel Frank was on. They were killing it. And then there was a lull.
Yeah.
And then when you came on, it was like they were back. Yeah, sorry to any K2 guys that were in between. Like, because
I mean,
Lance was awesome. Lance was killing it all the way through.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just needed a revamp.
Yeah.
And you were the right guy to do it. That's great.
We had Travis Parker.
Yeah.
Bobby Meeks.
Right.
It was a really fun team.
Yeah. That's killer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember they were really aggressively going after like core shops. We're like, we need to be in the core shops. We can't be in these ski shops that, you know, it was a cool vibe.
Yeah.
It was a good time.
No, I really enjoyed all the years. I did work, you know, rode with those guys, and I still, that was my last snowboard sponsor. So
I saw, what was your last part? I just saw a really good part. where it opens on the night, in the night, you're taking that, you're doing.
Oh, that was with MacDog. I think it was
Picture Follow This. Follow Me Around. Picture This. You're right. Yeah. It's Picture This.
And then I filmed a little bit of Volcom, some clips here and there.
Were you on Volcom Outerwear?
Yeah.
When you were on K2?
Yep.
Because they had some outerwear stuff that just never really flew. K2. Yeah, oh, yeah. And they had Planet Earth, right? They probably would have pushed you to go on Planet Earth, but.
When I got sign on, actually, I forgot. So we got a sign on Forum. It was kind of like Peter was like, eh, I'd rather you be on Foursquare.
Of course.
Than wearing, because at the time, Billabong, like, I think their license name expired in the US, and then Hurley.
Oh, shit.
Hurley started.
Wow.
So I was going to wear Hurley.
Yeah.
Outerwear.
Yeah.
And I was like, not super excited about the time about wearing Hurley outfits.
I got you.
And Peter was like, you want to ride in Foursquare? And I was like, yes. you know, I loved Special Blend stuff when they
had it. It was so nice. Yeah.
So I always was like, I want to ride on either Special Blend or Foursquare. But I felt a little bit more like special with being Foursquare because there really wasn't any new riders at the time.
Right.
It was Ingemar and Peter.
Oh, sick.
And then I got put on. And it was
wow.
Like, yeah.
That's dope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, Chad Otterstrom.
Oh, yeah.
It was... So it's Chad Otis and me, Peter and Ingemar.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah.
That's a team. I mean, right,
then
there.
He obviously went forward, but
Yeah. Well, that's fun. Like it sounds like you made really calculated, smart decisions with your sponsors.
Yeah, looking back at it, yes, but I don't think I thought through him like that. You know what I mean? Like you think that I was like really thought through, but I think you're just like everything was like feel based.
You're feeling the vibe.
Yeah.
And you're going, I like this, I like that, I like these guys. Like you say, okay, new company.
I mean, it's true. There's some calculation of like, hey, you know, Supernatural is a new company.
Right.
This is the guy who's starting it. This is the team so far. Who's going to be on that team? Who's getting what? And what's going to happen?
Yeah.
And so, yes, I definitely thought about those things.
Right.
But, you know, I think I would have been happy there too.
You didn't have management. Like, you didn't have a manager that was negotiating these contracts and things for you?
No, I tried having a manager once. I just didn't like it.
Yeah, yeah, I could see it.
They probably could have got me more money, but I just, like, listening to my friends who had managers, and I just seemed like another person that I just didn't want to bring in the mix.
yeah. You seem like you had a fairly... like strong will as well, like that you were confident to be able to negotiate for yourself.
Yeah, I don't know, I guess. I mean, I think I was a little bit of a shithead, to be honest with you. I was like...
I'm getting that vibe that that's how you felt. I've never heard it, obviously.
I was just like, this is my way. And if you guys are cool with it.
Well, you're a professional snowboarder at the time when snowboarding is the most popular new thing that's going on in the world, right? Like the Olympics are happening. Everybody's talking about it. Snowboarding's going from like 7% of the visits to ski hills to like 60%.
Yeah.
It's blowing up and you're one of the guys that can actually do it and you're at the top of the game of the people that can. So yeah, no shit. You're going to be a professional athlete in your mindset. I could see that I know I would be if I could have done it.
Yeah.
But it also sounds like, you know, just from the fact that you could see the silliness and say, and maybe I'm reading this into it, but like, you know, the resistance and the skits in the front and taking yourselves so seriously as a team and being like, we're going to be these rock star guys and we're going to sign posters and we're going
to
fly
I'm so
around.
Happy I never had to do that intro.
You didn't do it? You're not in it?
No.
No. Who's in it? Everybody but you?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I never realized that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, were you not in it because...
Well, because they filmed it in...
And you weren't there?
In the summer when the video was getting released, and I was on K2 at the time.
Oh, so you had left by that point.
Yeah.
But you had a part in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you're one of the Forum 8, and that was their seminal work.
Yeah.
It would have been fun to film with those guys, though. Who was your crew to film with, like Kurt Heine or MacDog or Kearns?
You know, at the time, it was like I was actually kind of like I spent a lot of time with Kurt Heine. It was him and me and his girlfriend at the time.
Oh, wow.
Like, it was like almost like I had a solo filmer because it was just Ross would have his crew.
Mm-hmm.
Mike would have his crew.
Yeah.
And there would be like, I don't know. It just, I don't know why, but for some reason, Kurt Heine got the short end of the stick, and it was like he got stuck with the two fins, like me and Yoni. And Yoni wasn't over that much. And I had just bought a snowmobile. I had a Subaru, and I would tow that sled with
I love
trailer.
It. Amazing.
Just follow everywhere.
Yeah.
And that's when I went to like Whistler for the first time. I was so scared going across the border with my Subaru and my snowmobile, because I was like, it's a time when, you know, people are getting, you know, stopped at the border for going and filming video parts.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're getting paid money. You're not allowed to do that in Canada without filling out paperwork and all the bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that, I was really nervous crossing the border, and so I really tried not to go to Canada. Once I got in the U.S., I was kind of like, I'm filming my video part. I'm not leaving anywhere. I don't want to stress about traveling. So, like, you know, people were going to Europe to film parts, and I was like, I'm going to wait until the next storm in the States. Like,
oh, wow.
And it was just, that's how it was.
That's rad. How was that time in Whistler?
It was good. It was actually more hectic than the snowmobile side because, you know, just going up there.
It's gnarly.
Yeah.
I bought a sled 2 years ago, sold it this year, didn't really get to use it. Like, I went 5 or 6 days, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And every time I came back to the truck, I was like, holy fuck, I have a lot to learn. And learning it there is like, if you're into hockey, being on the ice with the fucking Canucks. Like, everywhere you look, somebody's jumping off of this with their sled, and then that guy's doing a cliff on his board, and they're setting up for a shot over here.
Yeah.
And I'm looking going, how did everybody go down that and up without falling in that giant hole that's right there? And then I'd fall in the hole, and people would be like, what happened to you? I was like, every time I went, it was a disaster.
Yeah.
It was scary.
Yeah, I mean, that's, it was kind of funny because I got really into snowmobiling really fast.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, I think the same way, you know, like my snowmobile would go to place I didn't want it to. And then I was like, I need to practice. And then I would go out a couple of days, not even snowboard, just snowmobiling.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I want to see if I can hit a jump. And it was just like, okay, now I need to learn how to ride this thing. And then I got really into it. And I would even buy like, you know, chest pads
and vests and everything,
and knee guards and stuff, so I could just like send it on the sled and not feel like I'm gonna break my wrist.
Rad.
And yeah,
it's a beautiful zone in Canada for sure. It's an incredible zone.
Yeah,
best snowboarding I've ever done in my life.
Yeah, I mean, that was the old thing. Is like, I didn't know anything. I didn't know going there. I happened to, you know, go there during a storm and never really cleared up, so it was always like, you know, kind of flat light, hitting jumps in flat light of something that I've never hit. And, you know, my experience of back country riding wasn't that much at that time. It was mostly, you know, hitting back country jumps and park jumps, which can be pretty easy to translate, you know, do this trick off this jump, but then you have to land it in like deep powder, and that takes a little while, but then you got to do it in some other jump somewhere in flat light, super steep in these, you know, place I'm not used to. It's really hard.
Yeah, of course.
And I think that's something that gets lost in translation of like, once you become professional, like, you got to be able to adapt all those things everywhere, and nothing is ever good. You look at like skate videos, like craziest spots, and then you see this like what they have to roll over before they hit the handrail. You're just like, oh my God,
it's impossible.
And same thing with snowboarding. You don't, you see these jumps and you don't even realize what the end run is like.
No. Yeah. Or even getting there. Yeah. Like, you never even think of that.
Yeah.
Like, that you had to wake up at 5 in the morning, somewhere where you probably had an uncomfortable sleep, get in your Subaru, have a coffee. That's what Devin said to me when I was complaining about the snowboarding or snowmobiling. He's like, you don't love it? Like, I love getting up that early. I love getting up that early. I love getting my coffee.
Sorry.
Oh, Yeah, sister's about to jump over to the fence.
That's fine. You can go. Go ahead, sister. Anyways, sorry.
Yeah, Devin just told me, look, you got to enjoy the whole thing. You got to enjoy the morning, getting up early, having your coffee. You do your little stretch, get in your car, put on good tunes, enjoy your tunes. You take your sled out, you know, look at it, enjoy, turn it on, enjoy the ride up, look it around, take some pictures, have some fun. Like, I'm like, no, I don't enjoy any of that. I enjoy the snowboarding 100%.
Yeah.
But then I forget, because by the end of the day, you're riding back on all those whoops and you're going, oh, I'm going to die.
That's the worst part of the Whistler.
That was the worst part for me, for sure.
It's like those bumps.
No, thank you. Yeah. It's like, I don't ride moguls at a resort ever. I don't want to.
I mean, I finally figured out how to just bomb through all those moguls. Just pin it.
Oh yeah. Most people were telling me like, dude, you're going to learn it right now. It's the hardest it could possibly be for you.
Yeah.
So.
And the slower you go, the harder it is.
The worse it is on you. And you don't know how to hold your body. You don't know how to power through. So yeah, I never got through it.
Yeah.
But I'm going to get a new sled eventually and do it because it is super fun.
Yeah.
It is the best place in the world.
I do miss like getting in the backcountry with sled. It's like, you get to places that you can never get to. Otherwise.
Even heli, because heli, you've got a guide that's telling you, you can't go here, you can't go there, I got to go first.
Although, I've been to Valdez with a sled.
Ooh.
And that's terrifying.
Oh.
That is absolutely terrifying. I would way rather go on a heli, because when you look at those steep hills from the bottom, and there's crevasses everywhere, and you think about something get triggered, you're starting at the bottom. You're at, you know, you're trapped right away. There's no getting out. So that was the first time I was like, yeah, I way rather be starting from the top, triggering an avalanche, and somehow have time to get out of it
or
cut out or something. Starting from the bottom, riding a sled or hiking or whatever it is, it was terrifying.
How hard is it to do this stuff as your kid is getting older and your family life is taking up more of your time? Like, were there times where you're thinking, I've got a family, I should not be doing this right now, or I don't want to hit this jump today?
That was my last year.
I heard you're looking sideways when he mostly talked about the coffee, but he's talking about that trip where you bought the coffee roaster. Mm-hmm. And you're supposed to be going to South America, and something inside you just said, I don't want to do this.
Yeah, it was like, you know, when you get, I don't know, it's like there's this moment when you get really in tune with whatever you're doing, you sort of listen to just instincts. And sometimes you get jumps, sometimes you don't. Yeah. And every time your mind or whatever, you feel bad about something and you force yourself to hit the jump because you're like, this is my job, whatever, I get hurt. Like almost every single time I'm like, something bad happens.
Yeah.
And so I've learned to kind of like feel it out, because I'm like, well, I want to keep doing this for years, so I need to know when to go and when not to go. And so there's been times when I'm like, you know, I'm like, I'm not going to hit this jump. I was with Devin actually in Alaska, and he jumped over this gully, and it was like a heel slide turn for me to ride in all the way. And I looked at the trajectory where I have to go, and I was like, if I come off my heel edge a little bit, I'm going to actually fly into the gully, into the rocks. And there's not enough time to make that adjustment, and I just didn't feel like it was worth it.
Right.
So I just was like, yeah, maybe on my toe edge, I would feel slightly different, but just coming down and flying this turn on my heel edge just didn't feel right. And, you know, Devin got a cover shot. It was like so worth it. He was the only one hitting it. It was amazing.
Right.
Me and Andreas were both watching and we're just like, wow, that's sick. The jump isn't like massive or anything. It just didn't feel right.
Right. Right.
And so you get those moments in your career a couple times where you're just like, I don't want to do this because whatever reason, you're scared, or, and if you're scared and you force yourself, then that's even worse because
totally
you're not ready for it.
Right.
And so the only reason people are able to do, you know, what they do is because they're not scared. That's how you get to that point.
Hell yeah.
And so when I was going to airport, going that trip, I had the same feeling at the airport. I was like, oh, this doesn't feel right. Something's off.
Yeah.
And I was already late and my bag wasn't going to make it on the next flight.
Right.
And I just told the lady at the ticket counter, I'm like, actually, I'm just not going to go. She's like, what? I'm like, eh, I'm just going to, no, I'm not going to go. And I just took my bags and went home.
Wow.
And yeah.
And then K2 wanted you to go anyways, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I was just like, no, I'm not going. And they were just like, okay, this is going to affect your contract.
Yada, right. Yada.
And I didn't care that much because at that point I was like I was kind of checked out.
Your focus had shifted, right? Yeah. Like you got excited about coffee.
Yeah. It was kind of the same feeling coffee that I had with snowboarding when I started snowboarding. But the actual time, the first time I had feeling of like, I can't do this because I'm a dad or it was in Alaska. The prior year filming Hostinic.
Yep.
And we set off like a few avalanches in one day and I thought DCP definitely died in one of them.
Oh, wow.
The size of that avalanche, I've never seen anything like it. I didn't know he was in it, that he wasn't in it, but I thought he was in it.
And God.
The crack just, you know, it came from 20 feet from me. I was sitting waiting my turn to drop in and he was going first, but he was next peak over.
Oh, God.
And the whole face cracked and he just stopped like 20 or 30 feet from me and everything went down, but it was like, you know, a 5 foot crown.
Oh, God.
And when it hit the other wall, it shot like 200 or 300 yards up. It looked like, something out of a movie.
Yeah.
And I thought DCP was in it. And I was like, oh, it doesn't even matter if you find him because he's not going to be alive.
Of course. Yeah.
It was like,
that's horrifying.
There's like no way you can survive that. And, but what had happened is he had a bad feeling.
Yeah.
He was taking turns and he made a turn before the cliff and just kind of 90 and punched both his fists into the snow. And the slough above him was like, went over him. As soon as that went over the cliff,
oh, God.
That's when the face broke.
Oh my God.
And so he was sitting on top of a cliff, just terrified.
Of course.
And then holy we went and filmed in a different face that was like kind of almost flat, like flat.
Yeah.
We did laps and hit this jump. Like not a big jump, it's kind of fun jump. I think like lap 5 or 6, I'm like riding and all of a sudden the whole mountain is just moving.
Oh my God. Like
looking around and everything is sliding. And this is like an 8 foot fracture.
Jesus.
And I just cut out and the whole avalanche just takes Justin out. And he's like with his camera and he rips his tripod legs off. And he just somehow gets spit back on the top right before it drops off the steep part. And he gets pushed out and he's at the surface. But I'm in such like automatic mode that I turn on my transceiver for search mode and I ride directly towards him. And I'm like, you know, the beeping sound and he's on the surface, but I'm still doing it.
Yeah.
Even though he's on the surface.
Oh, wow.
And that's like how much in a shock I was like.
Yes.
He was fine. I mean, he said it felt like a team of football players ran him over.
Yep.
And we lost, you know, Ollie was shooting photos and we lost some of his stuff and some few things, but nothing like we couldn't keep going. And then
is the worst day I've ever heard.
And yeah, but here's the thing is then we flew the heli to the resort and we had set up a jump from this cornice.
Yeah.
And Justin had set up his crazy man drone camera where it is that rope from another tree to another tree.
Yeah.
And he was hanging in it. And he is, I think the guy's name is Caleb, who was helping him and he was like releasing the rope and they had painted a part of the rope. When that painted part came, that's when he started breaking it to slow him down so he wouldn't slam into the trees below. The craziest, sketchiest setup. I can't believe he did that. But he did. And that's what we did after all those things.
God.
And I was with DCP and DCP does this thing where he coughs a lot before he's going to hit something. And then he puked. And I'm like, are you all right?
Oh,
he's
no.
like, he's like, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. It's like, sometimes this happens when I'm like nervous. And I was like, really? This happens to you when you're nervous? I'm like, wow. Like, you're hardcore. I'm like, I would not be hitting a jump if that happened to me. Like, that's crazy. And I booked my ticket that night home. I was like, yeah, I'm that bad night, enough.
You're over it.
Yeah.
That was a bad day.
Yeah.
Did you ever shoot ever again after that?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, but that was the end of that trip. You're like, I'm not doing Alaska like this.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
isn't, and it's not like you're not throwing Justin under the bus or anything.
No. We it had a guide was, with yeah. us, yeah. And I mean, the local guy was like, "Oh, no one's ridden this face, and there's going to be maybe like 10 to 20 inches could slide."
Yep.
He didn't know that 5 feet could slide.
Jeez.
So that was a little bit of a frustrating moment, and then also that the other slope slid.
Oof.
It's a little bit laxed.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
A lot of smoking weed.
Yeah.
Like, not of like, no one really like, and so it felt, at that moment, I felt like, maybe I shouldn't be doing this.
Wow. Wow. And then you're flying home to your family at that point.
Well, Lilu was living in Switzerland with her mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I had started dating Rebecca, who's my wife right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just wanted to be with her.
Yeah.
I was like,
I'm coming home.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a wrap.
Well, because she flew up for like 4 days up there. I flew up just because we had this storm and it wasn't going to be good. And, you know, when it's socked in up there, it's socked in. There's nothing to do.
Yes.
You're just stuck and you go get cabin fever.
Absolutely.
And so she came up and we hung out and just, you know, walked around town and was like, wow, this is like, there's nothing to do here. And this was in in Juneau.
Yep.
And I don't know, I mean, it's Alaska. It's amazing. The mountains are,
it's gorgeous,
fantastic. But if it's like bad weather, like, you don't really have much to do.
Yeah.
And that time of year, it's like snow everywhere. I don't know. We did ride a resort a lot, and that was cool. And Mark Frank came up there.
Oh, wow.
So that was fun.
How fun. Yeah, he's got to be one of the funnest guys to ride with.
Yeah, he's really fun.
His energy's really good. Hey?
Yeah.
Translates on video quite well.
Yeah.
Like, he's unique, but he's also...
Yeah, he's very, like, spontaneous.
Yeah.
I like that.
Cool.
Like, I'm, like, riding with him, and he's like, I'm going to do this. I'm like, sick. And then he does it, and I'm like, wow, that was awesome.
And his style is so, like, it's not calculated, but it's distinct. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to say calculated. He has his own style.
Yeah, he has his own style, but it's like, I don't think he, you know, some people will go through things in their head for so long, like, I'm going to do this trick and then this trick or whatever.
Yes.
I don't think he does that at all.
He's just riding.
Yeah.
He's whatever falls in front of him, he's playing on that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. So, yeah, I mean, we could talk about the coffee roasters. I feel like, you know, you're pretty successful. Bud Fawcett was like, he told me, you know, what coffee to order at your place. Like, you're kicking ass with coffee up here, right?
I mean, it's working.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know how to define successful. Like, successful, you make a lot of money. There's not a lot of money in coffee. Like, people have this idea that you're going to get really rich or you can do this. Yeah, sure, if you can sell your company and make it big.
Right.
You have to really love it and be able, you know, ready to work. I think we're able to do things our way. It's kind of cool because we're not... Some companies have to budget really hard on what they're buying, which farmers they're buying, what they can buy because it's too expensive or whatever it is. You know, there's like these budgets of like, we can't pay more than this for this coffee because then our clientele won't pay this and we got to stay in this price range.
Right.
I've kind of sort of just like put that out the door. I'm like, I don't care. Like,
yeah.
we're going to buy coffees that taste good and we're going to pay the farmers what they need to get paid.
Dope.
And being able to still make a business out of that. So that, to me, feels like the most successful
part. Yeah, that's dope.
But
that's sort of the theme of your life, is kind of doing it your own way.
Well, I think you have to do it, like, in order for you to be able to grind day in and out, it has to be something that you really like.
Yes.
And if you don't like it, it's, I mean, it'd be really horrible.
Well, I can't do it.
I can't imagine, like, you know, I mean, there's, COVID has been really tough on us. Like, that was definitely...
Retail-wise?
Yeah, retail. And just, like, having to lay the whole, like, most of the staff off and then, like, not knowing, you know, having $35,000 in your bank account, sending out checks for $32,000.
Oh, God.
That's... And so having $3,000 to, like, hey, this is, like, all the money we have. And then we have all these built up bills for the importers that we have to pay off, and going into COVID going like, we're going to probably go out of business.
Oh man.
Yeah.
And you made it through?
It's something, you know, because everyone was locked down.
Yeah.
So people were like, well, I need coffee at home. So people started ordering online. It was going crazy.
Awesome.
And so even though volume wise, we didn't go through all the coffee. So we lost a lot of money having to move this coffee so it didn't get old.
Right.
But we made up for it for all the sales of people, consumers, just like buying directly at home. Because those numbers were like crazy day in and day out.
Epic.
And because you have a higher margin on like direct to consumers.
Of course.
Versus wholesale.
Yep.
It doesn't also take as much staff to pack all those orders versus when you have a wholesale account who buys, you know, a lot of coffee, and then your margin's so small on that, and it takes a lot of people to fulfill all those orders.
Right.
And which is also fine. It's good. There's nothing wrong with that.
It's the same.
It's a different.
Yeah, it's a different business model, but it's the same. Yeah.
But you can't get to that retail number right off the gate. You have to sort of build that year after year.
Of course.
And, you know, at this point, we could probably stop doing wholesale hunt, like completely, and just do retail.
Rad.
But I mean, that would also be kind of harsh to the people that have supported
you, right, and take all the sales in house,
yeah.
But yourself, right? Yeah.
So I have no plans on doing that.
Business kind of sucks, doesn't it? Like,
oh, yeah.
Just like the idea that,
I mean, I
commerce.
I've never been super financially, like, money focused. In as far as like, maybe this sounds different because of like whatever I did move with Forum to K2,
mm-hmm.
but. That was more based on how I was feeling than actually the money.
Right.
And how I wanted to continue my career, but I needed to have different people pushing it.
Yeah. Comes across. Like, it doesn't seem like... I heard you call yourself out saying, well, I felt like a bit of a sellout. But really, you're following, you know, what you just said.
So, like, I've never been, like, super Mr. Money guy of, like, this is the best thing. I've always... done what I really want, then how do you make a business out of it?
Does that
make
sense?
My wife is much more savvy with finances. She'd be like, no, that doesn't make any sense. I'm like, oh, okay, how can I make this sense?
And
And she'll be like, hey, can't be spending money on this right now. We gotta, you know, I would love to have all kinds of coffee equipment and toys to make these things. Because it's like, but in the end, it's like you have to draw the line somewhere.
And make the money first and buy it out of profits as opposed to...
And also, like, at some point, you're like, is it really good to buy all those things? Is it good to have all these tools? I mean, they're tools, right? So having better tools to improve your product, there's a point you need that.
Yeah.
You know, you need to have R&D.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't need all this stuff.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm still... Dude, I like tools.
Feel like I cannot tell you how fun it was to talk snowboarding, a bit of coffee with you, and how important it is to me that you invited us into your home and let us come into your space and talk with you, man. It is really, really sick. I have a feeling in my heart that the last half hour is
completely black.
We've got the audio anyways. And, you know, it's a learning curve for me, and I feel a kindred spirit with you in that I want this to make money so I can go snowboarding and can, you know what I mean? But at the same time, if getting money made it suck, I wouldn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's you got to enjoy what you're doing, right?
It's too much fun. It's too much fun meeting legends like yourself. And
you know, I met Tony Guerrero.
Sick.
like last, I think it was last week. It was funny. I had this like fad moment of like, whoa.
Yeah.
I used to watch him skateboard. And I'm like telling my friend, I'm like, who has not skateboarded, nothing. And I'm like, this guy's a big deal. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's like, yeah. He's like, friends with my mom and dad. I'm like, okay.
I love it. Yeah. Yeah. So for most people, we're talking about it in this neighborhood and even in Portland, because Portland's under a siege of some kind with, you know, tent cities and people everywhere. And it's been happening for years and years and years. But you're, you know, rubbing elbows with mostly people that wouldn't know that you were an incredibly famous snowboarder. Fanning out.
It's, I wanted to separate it though.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to start a new chapter, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I didn't want to bring the ex pro snowboarder coffee roaster. I wanted to be like, oh, this coffee roaster is really good. But I kind of wanted to hide my past, if that makes sense.
Oh, of course it does, dude. Yeah.
It almost like, I was like almost ashamed of it. Kind of like, yeah, no, I like, oh yeah, I used to snowboard. And now it's fun because, you know, I've done it long enough where I don't feel like I have to improve, like prove myself in coffee.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I've done it for enough years. We have, you know, we have our connections. And
yeah.
So on.
You're successful. And, which is awesome.
So when I do meet people and they bring it up, it's more exciting. It's like, yeah, I can show them stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, everything is weird times right now with everything that's happening. Like,
yeah.
It's crazy. Like my biggest thing about it is like watching ski resorts make like fast track lanes pisses me off.
That's a bummer.
More than anything, because I'm like, you're just segregating right now.
Yeah.
The poor kids.
That's the failure of capitalism.
Yeah.
That if you can pay to skip a line,
yeah,
then it's only going to be rich people eventually that get to use anything.
Yeah.
And Disneyland. I remember the line hopper thing at Disneyland being like, oh, there's some rich people who can just afford to just go on all the rides.
Yeah.
And we got to wait in line the whole time. Yeah. It's a completely different experience.
Yeah,
that
I mean,
sucks.
It just, to me, that's such a bummer because I always felt like there was a little bit of like, snowboarding was kind of a little bit of a punk sport in the beginning.
Yeah.
And now it's turned into some sort of like rich luxury thing, which.
Yeah, the kids that are pros now that are at your level, like the equivalent of you today, has a coach and has, you know. Like,
yeah, they're actually athletes.
Athletes. Yeah, real athletes. And they negotiate, you know, with energy drinks and all this other kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah, it was a lot more punk during silence days.
I mean,
yeah,
that's how why I wanted to start going with it too, because I was like, this is like a weird, this isn't real. When I told my mom and dad, I'm getting paid for snowboarding. I don't think this is going to last for a long time. This like opportunity is something that is not going to be here in like a few years. Even if I'm a good snowboarder, I feel like it's like a weird time.
Yeah. Yeah. It was too. So I was like, actually,
I'm gonna
you're
jump
right.
On the wagon and see if I like,
and you were good though. You were the thing is that you were really good and you deserved what you got, but you were right. It's like,
at that time you can get sponsored if you can grab your board.
Right.
That was like, not quite, but you know what I mean? Like, it was like everyone was getting sponsored and right.
Yeah,
and
totally.
And that was like, yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of different directions of how, you know, got to where, whatever, and we could go on forever, but you probably can't see anything else. And there's a lot of mosquitoes.
Yeah, man.
It's really bad for mosquitoes this year. I'm sorry, guys. Are you guys camping?
Yeah, we're going to be in the forest, so...
It's been a cold and wet spring,
yeah,
and that creates tons of mosquitoes. We tried to go swimming the other day, and we had like went to Savis Island and just literally had to like pack our stuff because everyone was getting eaten alive.
Oh God!
My mom, kids, everyone was like screaming.
I have mosquito nets at my house, so we're toast. All right, man. Thank you so much, Vile. Yeah. It was so nice to meet you, and
likewise.
I'll let you know when this is coming out. Affenrad shout-outs this week to Vile and his entire family. Thanks for having us in your home, in your backyard until it got dark. That was super fun. Special thanks to Rob Dow. Without him, these videos wouldn't be happening. YouTube is a challenge, and I definitely look forward to getting better at making these things. Special thanks to intern Josh and General Brad. Be sure to come back next week for another episode of F'n Rad Snowboarding, presented by Vans and brought to you by SIA Productions.